Blog Talk Radio.
America won the Ryder Cup, finally, for a long, long, long national nightmare. It's over. Completely over. Completely over. Which is interesting because a lot of people thought it would be a win, thought it would be a decisive win, which it wound up being 17-11, but sometimes when you're in the event, you don't see it like that. So we'll get to that. And more coming up as this show goes on. We will recap it with Sean Davidson in a couple minutes. Right now we're going to talk about my Jets, who are atrocious. Not that I'm being atrocious, or being overly harsh on them. It's just that, I did not have a good feeling that they would play a complete game, and it turned out that they did not play a complete game. They played okay defensively, but the problem is when your offense isn't doing much, you have to be perfect, and they were not perfect, and they gave up a couple too many, one big play, and just too many drives that they couldn't hold the field goals that wound up being touchdowns, and then Ryan Fitzpatrick decided to throw some more interceptions. So this is one of those games where you know, you sometimes think or sometimes try or sometimes think or try or focus on you know, trying to find a positive. This Jet team's got to play a complete game, got to run the ball better, pass the ball better, find more efficiency offensively and defensively, get to the quarterback, stop the quarterback, and really clamp down some of these outside receivers. Revis now is a bum ankle. It's just inconsistency that is really reigning supreme, and when you have that problem, when you have inconsistency on multiple levels of the team, you're not going to win football games. That's what the Jets have right now, and unfortunately they're 1-3 and still in the middle of this gauntlet that is Pittsburgh, Arizona, and Baltimore. So I have a feeling that by the time we get to a couple weeks here, this season will be basically over. We shall see how that turns out as we go on. We will take a 30-second timeout and come right back with Sean Davidson to talk about the Ryder Cup. This is teaming up for Jeremy Schilling.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA's been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA's doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
We're back on Teeing It Up, and joining us now to talk about the Ryder Cup is our friend Sean Davidson. And Sean, I think you can basically say it as simple as this. American golf has found an emotional core and Patrick Reed unlike anything I've ever seen in the last 20 years of following this game. What he did this weekend and the emotion he showed and the passion he showed. We've always talked about American golf missing the it. I think they found the it for the Ryder Cup in Patrick Reed.
No, I absolutely agree. I think you're totally right. And to make things incredibly simple, if we can make illusions, he is America's Ian Poulter. It's that simple. The way Ian Poulter could turn it on for the Ryder Cup and spur Europe on, he's largely responsible for them coming back at Medina 4 years ago and breaking the hearts of the Americans and Captain Love then with the putts that he made coming down the stretch on Saturday when he was playing with Rory McIlroy in the evening. I mean, that's what Ian Poulter did when he was healthy and playing for Europe, and that is what Patrick Reed is doing. The only difference you could say is that Patrick Reed is more consistently good on tour and a more consistent winner out on the PGA Tour beyond the Ryder Cup. But still, you have two high-quality players that really turn it on for the Ryder Cup, and I would imagine that if Ian Poulter gets himself healthy moving forward and can return to the form that he showed in the past, we will see him playing for Europe and Patrick Reed playing for America, and that would be one heck of a singles match on Sunday to watch.
You know, it's that match against Rory is one of the greatest matches I've ever seen, the greatest matches match play has ever seen, the greatest matches golf has ever seen. The amount of pure screaming, pure emotion, pure muscle flexing, pure just insanity is one thing, but the level of golf, I mean, they both practically turned in 29. I mean, I think there was 8 birdies and an eagle or some absurd number between them. What they did in that front nine on Sunday was something we'll never see before. I think just that front nine, if Golf Channel were to cut up just that front nine, that is an instant classic right in itself.
No, you're absolutely right. I was sitting on the edge of my couch. My football weekend had long since been shot, so I was really relying on the Ryder Cup to help spur me through the weekend and make my sports weekend worthwhile. And even if the Americans had lost the Ryder Cup, watching that match unfold the way it did would have been good enough for me. I can say that now, having seen the Americans win the Ryder Cup. But that match was everything we hoped it would be, with Rory McIlroy playing the way he played, coming in, looking like the best player in the world once again, against a guy who just refuses to lose in this match play format, who just oozes passion and enthusiasm. And Rory ended up feeding into it, and he was fed by the crowd and their energy and wanting to silence the crowd, and it was just insane. I think he said it. It was just pure insanity, and it was so much fun to watch. And as I've told a bunch of my friends who think that golf is boring, I tell them one of two things. A, if you play it, you'll think it's less boring. B, if you watch something like the back nine at Augusta or Sunday at a Ryder Cup, you will understand it so much better. And if there were any casual fans who were watching the Ryder Cup just to see how the Americans did or just to root for America in general, whatever it is, they were treated to a great show between those two players. And the rest of the field didn't do half bad either. When you look at Phil Mickelson and Sergio Garcia, 19 combined birdies, each shooting 63. I mean, the quality of golf on Sunday was incredible.
That it was, and we will get to Phil and Sergio in a second. What's interesting, you talk about the roars from people watching Rory and Reed off video screens that forced other players, including Phil, to back off at one point, was very Augusta-like. That whole atmosphere this past weekend at Hazeltine was just unbelievable. Those fans, and some of them crossed the line at times, and that's disappointing. But that entire atmosphere was just absolutely unbelievable.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think Rory McIlroy said it best when they were asked about the fans and the ones that crossed the line, and he said, you know, being inside the ropes is a privilege, but at times I wish I could be outside the ropes and have a beer in hand at 7:30 in the morning when they don't tee off till 10 and keep at it until 8 o'clock at night. And you would see me, or you would see other people in Europe, when it's in Europe, if that's the case, making those kinds of remarks. And they do make those remarks in Europe as well. And I mean, Rory was great about the fans. So was Darren Clark. So were all the Europeans. And from what I understand, from what everybody has said, the American fans, for the most part, were great about the one or two bad eggs in each crowd or in each set of stands, and that was great. But, I mean, you talk about the crowd in general, you're talking about Minnesota and Wisconsin, areas that their golf season is incredibly short because of the snow and because of the bad weather and the cold through practically half the year. And for them, this is it. I mean, they've had big events in the past, and they don't know if they're going to have a big event anytime in the near future. Quite frankly, there's nothing scheduled for Hazeltine in the near future. So this is it for them. And this was their chance to come on out and watch a major golf event, the best golfers in the world, for something like the Ryder Cup, and with it meaning so much to the Americans to finally win it back. All that emotion boiled over inside the ropes and outside the ropes, and it really was a captivating event from start to finish.
Yeah, seriously. All right, so, you know, Patrick Reed, told Roger Malpe pretty, confidently, I believe him a top five player in the world. He's not there yet. Certainly, he played like a number one player in the world this weekend on Sunday, especially on Saturday when he carried Jordan Spieth in that afternoon match. Do you, you know, look, you know, as Molly Solomon, who is one of the head producers at Golf Channel, said last night, hey, live from the Masters is in 182 days. So we'll be here way before we know it. But, you know, thinking ahead to Augusta and major season next year, to perform at this level, in this atmosphere, in this cauldron of sport, has to be a huge confidence boost to Patrick Reed, you know, thinking that he can do this going forward.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Patrick Reed is not a guy that lacks confidence. I'll put it that way. And that's half the battle to begin with. But when you compete in events such as this and you play somebody like Rory McIlroy, straight up, the guy who just won the FedEx Cup, who spent extended time as the number one player in the world, who's won several major championships, and you're able to do what you did back and forth, down the stretch, matching everything he does, it can't help but boost your confidence moving forward, and rightfully so. And as for Patrick Reed's comment about being a top five player in the world all that time ago, granted, he's not there yet on paper, but you know what? You would be hard-pressed right now to find a whole lot of guys who are playing better than Patrick Reed right now, and I think it's only a matter of time before he gets there. As far as major championships go, I mean, the Masters could be a tournament that he wins and wins soon, considering he played at Augusta State and has played at Augusta National time and time again. It's almost like a de facto home game for him, even though he's living down in Texas now. And another thing that I think this does for Patrick Reed moving forward is there was a period of time about a year or so ago where he was not viewed as kindly in the public eye, whether it be for the allegations about his time at Georgia and why he had to leave and go to Augusta State and so on and so forth. And there were a lot of questions, and there were a lot of people that were pressing him to divulge certain things, and a lot of people who didn't look so kindly on Patrick Reed. And I don't want to say he fell from grace, but people were just really suspicious about him. This is the kind of thing where he let his game do the talking, and with Americans' hopes on their team to get that Ryder Cup back, he was undoubtedly the leader of that team in doing so. He was undoubtedly the emotional leader in doing so. And the quality of golf that he put out there, even though the Americans as a whole were incredible, was by far and away higher than everybody else. It makes him, as what people said on Twitter, Captain America, the hero of the Americans and the hero for the Americans at that Ryder Cup. And that can only help him moving forward in terms of being a crowd favorite and really finally being embraced by golf fans, because he's been a great player for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. What's interesting about, you know, what you said there, though, Sean, about Patrick, is that I would argue that things like the Ryder Cup are so much about just, you know, get the team to win, get the country to win, and I don't quite care what kind of a person you are. That I'm not sure this is where we look at golfers as role models this week as much as we do every other week when we talk so much about charity and sponsors and winners and what this does for them and their family and all that stuff. So I totally am with you that Patrick Reed went from a villain to a hero. But I am curious about if he goes and ends up in a situation where we end up with him at Butler Cabin or having a jacket put on him or having a trophy handed to him, if some of this discussion about his past comes back, because he is not a perfect person. He has a very interesting and quizzical and confusing and, in some people's eyes, negative past. And I do wonder if on an individual level, when we get back into that kind of a play, if some of that stuff comes back. But I do agree that he has gone from a villain to a hero in a lot of eyes of American golf fans. Once a hero, always a hero, and never was anything but a hero, was Phil Mickelson, who absolutely golfed his ball as good as I can remember in a long time. Because at times, I mean, look at Thursday morning. He hit it all. He hit the ball. Friday morning. He hit it all over the lot. He hit a ball out of bounds. He wasn't hitting fairways. And suddenly Saturday afternoon, the game clicked, and then boom, yesterday versus Sergio, 10 birdies, 63 if it was a stroke play. Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. Phil Mickelson, I mean, you never know what you're going to get with him, and that's why I absolutely love watching him so much. And for him, I mean, my goodness, he takes a special sense of pride in never needing a captain's pick to make a Ryder Cup team. And he played incredibly well this year. And I'm going to go right out and say, you know, absolutely, he and Sergio deserve to have for that match, because they both played incredible golf, like low-key incredible golf, because we were watching Patrick Reed and Rory McIlroy so much. But, I mean, both played incredible golf on Sunday and deserve a half. But I can't help but be amused at Phil Mickelson, and just when he plays his best, especially this year, it sure seems that there's somebody else who plays just as well, if not better. Played great at Pebble Beach, lost to a Sunday 65. Played great at the Open Championship, and Henrik Stenson went lower. Plays great on Sunday at the Ryder Cup, and Sergio Garcia matches him, and they have the match. I mean, all the key moments this year for Phil Mickelson where he could have, would have, should have won, somehow, some way, it gets wiped out from underneath him, or he has to settle for a half. But my goodness, I mean, 46 years old, still has some serious heights on those jumps. And, I mean, 10 birdies, I can tell you right now, I could probably play 3 or 4 rounds of golf in a row and maybe make 10 or 11 birdies combined. It's just insane, the quality of golf that he has put together, especially since retooling his swing earlier this year, at his age. And, I mean, when you see a 46-year-old putting up 10 birdies in any round, in any competition, anywhere, you have to look at them and say, absolutely, they can still contend in majors. And that means the U.S. Open is still very much a possibility for Phil. But if Phil plays like he did earlier in the Ryder Cup, where he was spraying it all over the lot, it's not going to happen. If he plays like he did on Sunday, he can win any of the majors this next year. No problem.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, he had to have his swing coach come in for a Help me 911 swing lesson there. His swing was so far off. And the big thing with Phil, this is all his idea. The task force was his idea, this whole retooling, rebooting of the whole Ryder Cup system, getting players more involved. It worked. He put his butt on the line. He said, I had so much pressure in that first match because I felt that this is so much on me. It paid off. Everything worked. What Davis did worked. The 5 vice captains worked. This whole rebooted system for Ryder Cup USA completely work.
No, you're absolutely right. Giving the players more of a say and letting the ones who are working inside the ropes and are the ones that are responsible for putting the points up on the board have a say as far as what works and what doesn't work for them to help them better move forward. I mean, it was long overdue for them to have more of a say and to make more of an impact on who the captains were and who were the captains' picks and all the different things that go along with that. And, you know, he did put himself on the line by putting Tom Watson on the spot and saying that he strayed away from a winning formula and didn't give us much of a say, and that never should have happened. And he's the kind of guy that, you know, he can get himself in trouble in the press room, and he can endear himself in the press room, and he can endear himself even more so on the golf course. But, yeah, no, absolutely. Because of some of the comments he has made in the past, there was a lot of pressure on Phil Mickelson to prove it on the golf course and for this Ryder Cup team with all the changes that they had made in the years past to prove that the task force was worth the change. And they did so, emphatically. And good for them.
Yeah, talking with Sean Davidson about the Ryder Cup, I thought, and this is an off-the-course thing, but I think it speaks to what the Ryder Cup means. I'm not sure if you caught what Bubba Watson told Jimmy Roberts last night once the matches were over, but calling this week, the vice captain, the fifth vice captain, the last-minute added vice captain, the biggest thing in golf he has ever done beyond his two green jackets, and that getting tees for someone was better than the wedge in the playoff out of the trees at 10 at Augusta in 2012. Bubba's a little different, but if that doesn't speak volumes, I don't know what does.
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, it is a surprising comment as somebody who's won two green jackets and has played on the Ryder Cup teams to say that any of his accomplishments inside the ropes pale in comparison to being an assistant captain, a last-minute assistant captain, because he just narrowly missed out on being on the team. But, you know, Bubba's the kind of guy that he rubs some people the wrong way, but he also has a reputation with many others of being very selfless and being very service-driven. And for him to help out in any way he could, it, you know, it doesn't surprise me that that is something that he wanted to do. And to be able to do so and to be as embraced as he was and to be a part of a winning team, and as Tiger Woods said, you know, we were all part of that team behind Davis Love, regardless of whether we were captains or assistant captains or players or whoever we were all part of one collective team. He still probably felt very much like he was a part of the team and a productive part of that team as well. So for him to be a part of something that brought something so special and so important back to the United States that hadn't been here for quite some time, I can understand where he's coming from. And it does speak volumes about the quality and the meaning of the Ryder Cup.
Absolutely. We can't talk about the Ryder Cup and not talk about the Europeans. Sergio came alive. Rory went nuts. The rookies struggled, except for Thomas Peters. And I believe that Thomas Peters, and both of us know this while following golf for a very long time, Thomas Peters is going to be a great player. He already is a great player. He showed it this week going 3-1. What a sensational Ryder Cup for him. He really stepped up on a big stage, and a lot of people have a lot of promise for him. And Darren Clark says that he has the talent to be as good as Rory or any of the other top players. He really impressed a lot of people this week.
No, absolutely. Thomas Peters, my goodness, he's only 24, and he is going to be very good for a very long time. It's good that the Americans and that people around the world got to know that name, because they will be seeing it quite often. Quite frankly, if I was his manager, I believe Shane Bacon tweeted this the other night, I would get rid of his passport, throw his passport and everything away, and tell him that he's playing in the fall events on the PGA Tour, because he very well could win one or two of them. I mean, this is a guy that's won several times now over in Europe. That's what put him on the European Ryder Cup team as a rookie, and he absolutely came out, and with the exception of maybe Brooks Koepka, had the most impressive performance by a rookie that we've seen in quite some time.
Absolutely, and your guy Brooks had a great Ryder Cup as well, and got some key points. There's so many different ways we can go in the small amount of time we have left, but I do want to mention Ryan Moore. Here's a guy, wasn't on the team, didn't think he'd be on the team, basically told anybody who would listen to him, I'm not on the team, gets the final call Sunday night, goes home to Vegas to drop off his family, then gets to Minnesota, never gets fitted for clothes, has gotten fitted for clothes for past team events and never gotten picked. So, hey, you know, maybe he shouldn't get fit for clothes. It's probably a good thing. Comes in as the hot guy after giving Rory all he could ask for last Sunday night, and then clinches the Ryder Cup for the U.S. on a weekend where he and J.B. Holmes play really nicely. You know, just what a weekend for Ryan.
No, absolutely. When he was in that playoff with Rory and just the quality of golf that he displayed in that playoff with Rory, as I told you before the Tour Championship, we were discussing who might get that last spot. And I said, you know, if Bubba Watson plays okay and another young American or any American makes a statement, finishes well up the leaderboard, does something special, I could see that person becoming that final pick. And what Ryan Moore did in that playoff with Rory McIlroy, pouring in putt after putt after putt and pushing him to the point where, you know what, it was essentially match play and showing the moxie that you want to see in somebody who's going to represent your country in an international competition, that was the moment where I realized this guy's probably going to be the 12th pick. And sure enough, a few hours later, he got the call. It's almost poetic justice, I guess you could say, the fact that the guy that got the last pick the week before the Ryder Cup, after the Tour Championship, the Billy Horschel pick, if you could say, because that's the pick Billy Horschel should have had a few years ago when he won the FedEx Cup, but the picks were already made, to be the guy that clinches the Ryder Cup as the guy that was the last on the team, it's just, you know, it's a storybook ending to Ryan Moore's Ryder Cup experience and to the entire U.S. Ryder Cup story.
Yeah. Two quickies. Number one, I forgot what I was going to say. I will get back to what I was going to say if I can think of it.
That was
Really
quick.
Here it is. I feel awful for Lee Westwood. Here's somebody who's had such a great career. He got divorced. He had a really tough personal stretch last year before. His game showed signs. He almost won the U.S. Open before having a tough Sunday. But, man, his short putting changed things late Saturday night. And then going into yesterday, he was on the opposite end of that cup-clinching match. There's a tongue twister. Just a really frustrating 3 days for Lee Westwood.
No, you're absolutely right. Lee Westwood, I really like Lee Westwood. He's arguably the best European player, one of the best players in the world that has not won a major yet. And quite frankly, it's the putter that's kept him from doing it, just not being able to make the putts when he's needed to. And once again, we saw it resurface at the Ryder Cup. And you always hate to see somebody lose a match in that way. You want to see great golf coming down the stretch. And to his defense, Ryan Moore, you could say, won that match equally with, you know, with that shot into 16, with the putt he made on 17, with the way he finished out on 18, just as much as Lee Westwood squandered his lead in that match. But going back to Saturday, you're absolutely right. It was the putting that surfaced and caused problems for Lee Westwood. He showed at times that he does have the good old Lee Westwood game that made him the number one player in the world, that put him on the leaderboards at the majors, and that will probably put him on leaderboards at a few more majors moving forward. As somebody who likes Lee Westwood, the person and the golfer, I can only hope that the putter cooperates one of these Sundays, and sort of like Darren Clark, who finally won a major late in his career, it happens for Lee Westwood as well.
Yeah. And finally, tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, live on Golf Channel, is the Arnold Palmer Memorial Service. You've been to Bay Hill. Your memory or legacy of Arnie in your eyes?
Well, when people say that Arnold Palmer was a man that never acted as though he was more important than anybody, that always made you feel like you were the only person in the room, they're absolutely right. I've had limited interaction with Arnold Palmer, but the one that sticks out was when I was covering the PGA Tour for a couple of years when they were coming through Florida. I've since been doing the whole college sports thing and haven't been able to do so for the past year or so. But he was walking his dog, Mulligan, who's also since passed away. after Matt Every went through the media tent and did his press conferences and whatnot, and me and a few friends of mine were making our way out of the media tent. All three of us, college students, a couple of them at UCF there in Orlando, myself at Florida State. And Arnold Palmer walks by and just out of nowhere, super enthusiastically, "Hey, guys, thanks for coming and covering my tournament." And he asked us where we were from, and he asked us what our majors were, and he asked us what our goals were, and he told us best of luck to drive home safely and be well. And just that one conversation with Arnold Palmer, I felt like I knew the man for years and years and years, and it's something that I will never forget. I wanted to take a picture with him, but it was just too dark outside, and now I wish it was a little bit lighter. But Arnold Palmer is a man that I will never forget. I've run into him many a times when I was up in the NBC booth with Dan Hicks and Johnny Miller, and for security reasons, they'd always kick me out of the booth when Arnold Palmer came up, but I would always say hi to Mr. Palmer in passing in that setting as well. Just a real wonderful man who's done incredible things for the world of golf and for the world in general, and he's going to be missed and remembered for a long, long time.
Well said. Very nice. That was a great little look into what made Arnie so special for so many people. Such a small moment that speaks such volumes about Arnold Palmer. Sean, thanks as always for coming on Teeing It Up.
And thank you, Jeremy.
And that is Teeing It Up for this week. We will see you Sunday for the Sunday Sprint. Have a great night, everybody.